Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast, Emergency Edition. I've never done a Sunday night podcast, mostly because over here in Europe, the golf usually ends after midnight, and it's the last thing I want to do, but pretty historic moment that we just witnessed from Henrik Stenson winning the Open Championship by 3 shots over Phil Mickelson. I am joined by Operations Supervisor from The Score, Adam Sarson. I would normally ask if you've recovered yet from what we just witnessed, but I don't think it's even possible given the amount of time since the last putt just dropped.
No, there is no chance to have recovered as of yet. It's been, about not even an hour, I guess, since it ended. I'm still in shock at what we actually just witnessed. I mean, there were two players who were playing a completely different course out there, apparently, and yeah. I don't understand how any of it ever actually happened.
I mean, how often do you see? I guess I should look this up before asking it. But guys, just like the second place guy is 11 shots clear of the third place guy. Like it really was. I mean, just broadcasts tend to hone in on just the final grouping and the final guys in the running at the end. There was almost no reason to show anybody else though at that point because it really was the biggest runaway two man show I've seen in a major.
I think I saw. I can't remember who tweeted it out, but I think I saw somebody just before we came on and did this say that it was. The previous biggest margin was 10 shots at the duel in the sun. So I mean, we're talking about a historic level of difference here. I mean, it was actually, I was saying to you just before we came on, but like it was actually comical, like watching what they were doing on Sunday, because it just everything was just so pure. Like it was a little different on Saturday where like they separated themselves on Saturday as well, but like Phil somehow, I don't know how he shot what he shot on Saturday, because he was all over the map, and he was somehow, I guess, seemingly getting lucky out there, but like it was completely different on Sunday because they were just hitting so pure shots. It was unbelievable.
I had a buddy actually come over. Usually I'm watching golf by myself, because like I said, it's usually pretty late at night, and I actually had a buddy come over and watch with me today, and he's a decent golf fan, not a huge golf fan, but We were literally laughing out loud at when putts started rolling in, like just looking at each other and laughing when Stenson would roll in a 25-footer, and like even he could clearly appreciate what was going on. It was absolutely ridiculous. But before we get into the
walked in a 51-footer, he walked in.
That was awesome. But did he like? Stenson does that. He starts walking on after some of the long putts. Are we positive he thought it was in, or was he just kind of like, you know what? I'm actually 40. I can't see that far. Like, I need to see how close this gets, and it went in.
I honestly don't think it matters. I really don't. It was the most boss moment you could have the entire week. It was incredible.
But I'm not confident. It was pretty. It was amazing. It was badass. But I'm not confident that he thought it was in when he started walking. That's the only criticism of it. It's gonna be up there for the Saucies. Don't you worry. It'll be your end Saucies. It will be there. I imagine that's gonna make the final four. Although Thomas Peters today breaking a club over his knee and then hitting it 15 feet. That's probably your front runner for the year.
You throw both parts of it into the drawers. Like, it's amazing.
Oh, this is the greatest tournament ever. I love this tournament. Unbelievable.
It's completely overshadowed, like Rory breaking a 3-wood. It's unbelievable this week.
Yeah, DJ Pioski just tweeted out like a list of top 10 things of the week, and I think Rory breaking a 3-wood only came in at like number 9. It was like, yeah. I forget. I didn't see the whole list. I don't have the list in front of me. But before the most important thing we have to tackle is these people that are out there trying to come up with a name for this thing, like comparing it to the duel in the sun. The duel in the sun, they literally just described what the weather was like after the word duel. That's the amount of effort they put into naming this thing. Can we stop this?
The only like really really good one that I thought I saw from I think it was Joe Posnanski who tweeted it out was High Troon.
Okay,
that one's pretty good.
All right,
but the rest of them, like, yeah, you're trying too hard. Like, you know, it's not, you don't need to call it like the Tussle of Troon or something like that. It just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, you and I grew up in the Tiger era, and it's always a risk, especially this immediate aftermath of doing it, of hyperbole. But do you recall a better final round of a major in your lifetime?
Oh, no. I honestly don't think. I mean, look, you get so you can obviously look back at, you know, in terms of, you know, memorable moments, you obviously have all kinds of different stuff, whether it's Vandeveld or even, you know, Spieth, you know, this year at Augusta, which I'm sure you're still not over yet.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
But if we're talking about pure entertainment value, no, I mean, I can't recall anything that even comes close to this. There's a great account on Twitter, 15th Club, which I believe Jake Nichols writes for, and they were talking about all the strokes gained and whatever, and basically they were saying that Stenson's 20 under this week was pretty much equal to what Tiger did at Pebble in 2000.
Wow. Okay.
So, I mean, like, we're talking historic levels here.
Yeah, and that's so dating back all the way back to the 2015 PGA Championship. The Jason Day won at 20 under. Spieth finished in second at 17. Same exact two scores as Stenson and Mickelson this week, but behind that, Brandon Grace at 15, Justin Rose at 14, Kepka Lahiri 13, Kutsia, DJ, Kuchar 12, Finau, Streb 11. Like, there were guys that were, it was an easy setup. Whistling Straits just played very easy. Troon did not. I mean, Rory finished fifth at 4 under, and he was 16 shots back of Stenson.
It really is unfathomable. Like, you look at, like, what. And it's even better, actually, that there were two guys who did it. Like, these two guys obviously just, it felt like, I can't remember again who tweeted it, but it felt like those two were playing at the Barbasol this week. Like, it was insane. You have, like, J.B. Holmes shot 70 on the first 2 days and then 69 on the weekend. And it's like, he wasn't even remotely close.
No.
And he finished third.
Yeah, he should get, like, His Ryder Cup points count double for major championships. They should not count double for him for that. You cannot finish 11 shots behind second place and then like fully accept all the third place points for that, because that's ridiculous. But no, Hank Stenson and Phil shot a best ball 59 today in the final round of the major paired together. It wasn't easy conditions. Like, it wasn't tough. It wasn't like it wasn't whipping and raining and whatnot that it was earlier in the week, but it was not like it was on Thursday when Phil had basically as easy as possible conditions as you can have in an open. Hank had 2 3 putts too. He had 2 bogeys and he shot 63.
And it's so, like I said, comparing it to even yesterday's round, like yesterday's round was a whole lot tougher, and they still went out and shot 68 and 70. And just gave them enough of a cushion that it really wasn't, like, no one was going to catch them today anyway. And then on top of that, it's like they went out and just shot 63, 65, like it was nothing. It defies description on so many levels, really. And it's, you're never going to see this again. I really honestly believe you're never going to see this again.
Yeah, the only way it could have been better in my mind is if, I think if Phil had shot 63, Hank shot 65, and Phil beat him by one, that would have been like the storybook ending, I think. It would have been like, Stenson, you couldn't say anything about his performance. He didn't blow the lead, and Phil shot the greatest round in major championship history to beat him by one. I mean, not to say what we just witnessed wasn't incredible, but at the very end, the suspense was gone, at least by the 18th hole. But I should absolutely be, the last thing I should be doing is critiquing this tournament and trying to wish for something better than what we just witnessed.
Like, there is no way that Phil didn't deserve to lose at all. He did everything possible that he could do to not lose this tournament. Like, there's nothing you can really say about it. I'm struggling to come up with words.
Like, yeah.
There were I was reading something else too about how, like, his score of 17 under, like, he loses by 3, and he would have at least forced a playoff in 141 of 145 opens. Like, how do you post a number like that and not only lose, but lose by 3?
Oh, God. I don't know how he's got to be feeling right now. I mean, I know he's probably, his career in general, he's feeling very accomplished, I would think. But you just, how do you come to turn? You got, there's got to be a little bit of why me today. Like, you kidding me? All the final round heartbreaks I've had. I went out and shot 65 today and got beat by, I got beat by three. I mean, you got to just feel helpless at that point. It just doesn't feel right.
But yeah, I mean, maybe it feels a little bit better that it wasn't the U.S. Open, I guess. I mean, he's already got one of these. I mean, his life is obviously great as it is, but I mean, obviously you want to win as often as possible. You could tell, though, and like he did an interview with Steve Sands after the round, and like he knows how well he played today, and it just, you know, he can say that he's happy for Stenson, and I'm sure he is, but yeah. Like it's just not. It's not the same, obviously.
That's what made it so enjoyable, though, from a viewer standpoint, is, I would say I was like 55 to 45 rooting for Phil, but it was not like Zach Johnson versus Spieth at the British Open last year. Like, it was, my day could not have been affected by whoever won. Stenson's a very likable guy. I've always been a big fan of him, even though I don't talk about him a whole lot, but he's when it comes to foreign players that I root for, he's way near the top, near probably only behind Rory and maybe Sergio, depending on the situation. But such a likable guy. It's hard to find a bad thing to say about him other than the traditionalists that don't like his temper or whatever. That's really the only criticism I could think of him. So that's what made this so much fun. It's like these back and forth birdies. It was like, I couldn't even get up. I couldn't even be mad. Like there's no possible way you could have not enjoyed watching that. I felt people, not even golf fans, were tuning in, tweeting about it. And it was, that was wildly entertaining. I'm still buzzing from it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he's incredibly likable. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, like, not only from a personality standpoint, I mean, he's hilarious. Like, if you see him do any of the great stuff that the Callaway guys have been putting out on social the last few weeks, like, he's front and center as one of the funniest guys you'll ever see on tour. And then when you get to watch him on the course, like, he's just such a pure ball striker. Like, the ball sounds different. And, like, I know that's a cliche that people say, but, like, it really does sound different coming off of his club face than it does off of anybody else's. Like, he's insanely good. And the whole, like... Yeah, the whole thing about how he hasn't had a major win and all that yet. I mean, you and I both hate those kinds of conversations. So, obviously, with DJ last month, and you know, hopefully Sergio in 2 weeks we'll be done with that stuff. So
we made it 12 minutes into the recording, and without you mentioning Sergio and winning a major. So congratulations.
You mentioned
on
it
that.
First. In fairness, you mentioned
his name, and I would somewhat root for him. I did not. Mention him possibly getting off the major snide. It was like, even my buddy was, again, like, he's not the biggest golf fan we're watching, and he's just like, does Sergio just do this in every major, just kind of like near the top, but is clearly not going to win it? And I was like, yeah, that's a pretty good way of defining it at this point.
It's pretty accurate. I mean, that ends in a couple of weeks. So
oh,
that's,
God.
That's fine.
You're still going to do this. Oh,
yeah.
We picked him 2014 Masters, and I think that was the last time I did it, nor will ever do it. I was like, you know what? That was it. I've come this far. I don't think it's going to happen, but
eventually I'm going to be right. That's just my theory.
That's the logic, but there's going to be so much scar tissue at that point. Are you going to really even be able to enjoy it when it actually does happen, if it does? But
yeah.
What did you think, I guess, about Royal Troon, RNA setup, and the golf course in general?
Setup was great. There really isn't much to say about the setup. I mean, I don't know how much you can really do to a lot of these courses. Like Troon, it's pretty much perfect as it is anyway. I thought the RNA, obviously, with the high winds that were forecasted over at least for the first 3 days, they decided not to do anything with the greens. They're only running about, you know, nine and a half on the stem apparently. So I mean, like, the setup is great. It's not artificially penal. You know, like so much of the USGA setup is, like, it's obviously very penal. I mean, you saw what happened all week at the postage stamp. I mean, it's only 120 yards at the very most, depending on where the tee is that day. And the guys were just all over the place. Like, they couldn't figure out how to play it.
Yeah.
So the setup was great. The course, I've always liked Troon, so it was great to see.
Yeah, I thought, I made this point during the U.S. Open, too, is how much we just talk about the golf course during U.S. Open week and during Open Championship week. It's just kind of the setting, right? And that's the way it definitely should be. I feel like Troon's a little bit boring, and not like my favorite of the Open Championship courses, but at the same time, a great test. I love the fact that these guys were, I mean, I think it was kind of a freak way it played out, but the fact these guys were able to separate themselves says a lot about the golf course, more necessarily than it does like Stenson and Mickelson, and that, like that PGA Championship example I gave, like everybody went low, Day just went the lowest. Like, this was such a good setup to be able, if you're like really on your game, especially from a putting perspective. I feel like Stenson and Mickelson were the only ones making putts all week. It's just a setup where you could absolutely take it low if you were on fire, but you're not getting away with any. Like Rory, I felt like hit the ball really well for the better part of the week,
yep,
but just made too many mistakes, missed so many putts inside 5 feet, inside 10 feet, that he would never really got it together. And I mean, I was kept trying to talk myself into him making a comeback at this, and man, to come to 16 shots short. I'm happy the way that played out. I feel like there would have been so many, like, damn, if he'd have just made that putt, if he ended up being close, which I'm very thankful he was not close.
I mean, he still backdoored that top five.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just what he does.
It's a patented move, yeah.
Yeah, he's just so talented that obviously, you know, it'll take over, right? But no, I agree with you that it's not, like, the best course on the Ovin Rota, but, like, I mean, it's still so good that, you know, it's you can't really have any major complaints about it. I do think that some of the holes do kind of look so similar. But I love the poster stamp. Obviously, I love 10 and 11. They were very difficult all week. Like I said, it wasn't artificially difficult. Yeah. Like, it's not tricked out like the USGA makes all their courses. So I thought it was great.
I just love on the links courses how interesting like the 360 to 390 yard par fours can be, depending on the wind and like the strategy that goes into playing those holes. Those holes, no matter what you do in the U.S. to those holes, the pros are going to play those holes under par, like overall as a field. Like, you can trick them up as much as you want, but no matter what, outside the U.S. Open setup, those holes are always going to be birdie holes for those guys. But it's not necessarily the case when it comes to these links style and Open Championship courses, which I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, you could play a hole, and I think we saw a lot of different wins this week, which I don't think is a normal thing there. And you got, like, there was no, like, on a day-to-day basis, I didn't know how certain holes were playing. It wasn't like, oh, seven, everyone's going to be driving this hole today, or, oh,
yeah,
you know, four is easily reachable. Is it reachable on every day? I don't know. I find that really fun and really a strong test. So,
well, and then even just to go back to the postage stamps for a second, like, they were – Marco Mira one day, he birdied it one day, and he actually, like, he hit an 8-iron into the hole where it was only 100 yards. You know, Kuchar today put it in one of the bunkers and then, you know, ended up putting it back in the same bunker after pitching out. Like, it was, like, the whole thing is, like, the course design now, like, you know, you don't need the 245-yard par 3 to make these guys struggle a bit. You know, like, you just need to have them think, and if they think about it, you know, it's just more entertaining that way.
What was it, the difference between number 8 at Oakmont versus Troon? It was the length of a par 3. It was like 183 yards or something one of the days.
Exactly.
So ridiculous.
It's incredible.
So ridiculous. And I mean, Phil even made comments after the round. Brendan Porath was tweeting about just threw in a shot at the USGA, of course, at his RNA or at his Open Championship press conference. I'm doing great not calling it the British Open right now, which I was way too nice about that this week.
You better watch out.
Oh, I know. the best was today I did a fake quote from the USGA president, like screwing up Henrik Stenson's name in the announcement. I called it the British Open, and people were correcting me. Well, I've never heard of the British Open. What is that? It's like, oh my God, get over yourself.
You people need to let it go. If any of you are listening to this, you need to let it go. And I call it the Open Championship all the time. But like, come on.
All the time you save by not calling it the British Open and just calling it the Open, you waste correcting everybody else that says it. So
I thought it was interesting, though, that NBC, like, because obviously it's their first year on the coverage this year, but like NBC they made a point of not calling it the British Open on the air repeatedly this week. Like, they were just calling it the Open right from the very beginning, which, I mean, I guess they're, I don't know if they were told to do that or whatever, but no, that was definitely interesting to me too.
That's interesting because, yeah, I felt like ESPN, like, growing up as a kid, I know, like, the graphics all say the Open Championship or the 100 and whatever Open Championship, but I feel like they referred to it as the British Open, didn't they?
I thought the exact same thing while I was watching it this week.
Yeah. What did you think of NBC covering their first, or it's Golf Channel, I guess, covering their first major, and the combined NBC covering their first Open Championship?
Well, I mean, the best thing that they did was just, I mean, the sheer amount of coverage this week was insane. I know you're over in Europe, but here on the East Coast in North America, we had they were up at 1:30 in the morning.
Amazing.
Thursday and Friday. They had 29 hours of coverage the first 2 days. And, you know, they had a ton of coverage on the weekend, too, obviously. You could basically watch every shot. And I saw, I think, Jake Hoffman from Golf Channel retweeted something last couple days ago about how they actually did get everybody onto the broadcast at one point.
What do you mean? They got every player.
Yeah, every player was shown at least once on the broadcast at some point in the first 2 days. That seems impossible to me with the way that the broadcast should work. But I mean, that was the best. I thought that they could have used Faraday a little better.
Yeah.
But that seems to be a recurring thing with him since he moved to NBC. So I don't know if that's I don't know how much of a criticism that is at this point. So.
That's funny you mentioned about every player making the broadcast, because I remember I saw some Golf Channel staffer like tweet out after day one that 110 of the 156 players made it on the broadcast, and then on day two they randomly showed a guy I'd never heard of, one shot, it was like a par putt, and he was 10 over par, and I was like, they're literally just trying to show as many, like, for their stats, as many people as possible, which is cool. I'm fine with that, but I think, yeah, they got honed in a little bit on the weekend on just those final few guys. But again, I think the situation called for that. But it's, I know Fox kind of screwed up the curve on the Pro Tracer, and I know I tweeted maybe 85 times about it this week. But what a missed opportunity, man! I mean, this is not the Barbasol. No offense to the Barbasol. Like, this is a big boy event. You have the technology available to do this. On a links-style course where we have no sight lines, no trees to see the ball flying against, you got to use Pro Tracer, and they used it maybe 10% of as much as they should have.
Yeah, no, I mean, Fox, I mean, the whole, like, you know how we always say that, like, Tiger has ruined everything for, like, all these players coming up today because of how much he won?
Yep.
This is basically the same thing with Fox. Like, Fox actually has ruined coverage for the rest of us.
And what an amazing turnaround from last year. Like, well, how much we shredded them.
Well, yeah, I mean, in our group there, I actually messaged the other day thinking that, like, I was like, yeah, Fox is actually better than NBC now. Like, there's no getting around that for me.
Wow.
They just do a great job. And, like, and don't get me wrong, like, I thought NBC was decent this week. I mean, the amount of stuff that they showed is obviously paramount. Like, that's what you want.
Yeah.
But it definitely felt like on the weekend as well that, like, the actual golf to commercial ratio was way off.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, that's not exactly a huge shock, I guess. And, I mean, CBS is probably going to do the same thing with the PGA in a couple of weeks. But it is frustrating. And the Pro Tracer thing, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Like, yeah. I feel like I tweeted at them, both NBC and Golf Channel, and I felt like it's such an overwhelming thing, and that I was hoping – that they would at least notice it, be like, this is what people are talking about. Like, we need to do this. And
There was a shot on Thursday of Rory, and they had the Pro Tracer on Rory on the range.
Yeah.
And I was like, I would pay for this. Like, this is perfect.
Take my money.
And then we basically didn't get to see anywhere near as much Pro Tracer as we should have. That was frustrating for sure.
I just think, I don't know, I think that matters to golf fans. I think it really, really, really beefs up a broadcast, and that, and it's, yeah, kind of one of those things we didn't know how much we needed it until we had it, and then now we see it. But I have a hard time, I guess, putting Fox above NBC overall, just because their broadcast team is so stacked now. It's really ridiculous, and I could do without Faldo, you know, on the Golf Channel portion of it. But, man, bringing in Mike Tirico is a huge get. There's not that many guys that can do play-by-play that make it feel like a big event. And I'll give Nance, Hicks, and Tirico credit on all that. When SVP does it, too, it feels like a big event. But Joe Buck, he's fine. But, again, I don't feel like I'm watching a big major event when I hear him calling golf. But they're just the fact they can turn it over, you know, to Maltby. They got Faraday, who's criminally underused. They got Tirico, and I can do it. I'm not a big Peter Jacobson guy, but and they go Hicks, Johnny Miller. It's like, man, they are just absolutely stacked. I would love to see the commercials were a huge issue, I thought, this weekend. But if you can mix in the technology with that group, it's going to be that's a tough, tough team to beat.
I completely agree with you on Tirico, but it just kind of like Ferry, like it didn't seem like the role he was in this week was correct.
Right, it's like, kind of weird. Yeah, they're still like I don't know. Yeah, there's something. They feel like they kept going to him, like just him on the camera to describe something that's about to happen, like in like a cheesy written out thing, which I don't think is his role. But
it was either that or he was sitting with Jimmy Roberts, and like he would ask Jimmy Roberts a couple of questions, and they'd throw to a piece that they had done, and it's like, okay, is this really what Mike Tirico was here to do? Like, obviously with NBC, like he's there for the Olympics, he's there for football. Like, I get it, but like, you know, and I like Dan Harris, but I do prefer Tirico personally. I'm not so much like you. I'm not so much on the Peter Jacobson thing. But Johnny this week, Johnny was in some kind of form this week though. He definitely hasn't lost the fastball. That's 100% for sure.
Oh, it makes me sad that he doesn't call U.S. Opens anymore. It really is entertaining. I mean, I get what he was trying to say about Rory, about him being in the gym too much and wanting to show off his muscles too much, but the fact that he referred to him wearing too tight of shirts as part of the reason that he's being held back was just special. I mean, I'm not even mad about it. That was just special.
And then of all people, Gary Player calls him out on Twitter and says that it's balderdash that Rory works out too much.
Is that a word?
Oh, it's a word. It's absolutely a word.
Does it mean senseless talk? Okay, yeah, that's
a word. Oh, yeah, that's okay. Crazy. Yeah, no, Johnny, like, I used to be so far the other way on Johnny where it was like, I just couldn't stand him because I thought he was just being way too negative and over the top. I've actually gotten so far the other way now in that he's actually even more over the top now, and it's so funny to me that this is the way he's gone about things. It's the best. It's honestly the best.
I mean, he doesn't even try to mix in like veiled brags. Like, he just,
no.
When I won in 70 whatever, I won by 4 shots, right? Like, it's fantastic. I mean, I love how Nicholas, just again, Jack has nothing to do with this event, absolutely nothing. After Phil's missed 62, tweeted out a story that reminded him of his own run at 62. It was like, these guys the length they go to talk about themselves, it never ceases to amaze me. And Jack is always one for that.
Yeah, the enough about me, what do you think of me?
Yeah,
you know? Yeah, exactly. But I know. But like, it was great though. Just, I mean, obviously Stenson goes out and fires 63 on Sunday to win. And like, just the idea that Johnny's in the booth for that. Like I was really... Like, when Phil almost shot 62 on Thursday, Johnny wasn't actually in the booth at that point. I think it was Gannon and Faldo. And, like, I was just praying that he was going to do it just to see Johnny, like, just to see his head explode live on the air.
That's what I was hoping. Yeah, I think he was out there doing, like, voodoo stuff on that 18th green, willing that ball out of the hole on Mickelson's putt.
Trying his best to grab that bottle of champagne like Mercury Morris or something.
Yeah.
And pop it again. Like, it's, yeah, no, he's great. But yeah, the NBC, I thought they were okay, but you know, Fox has had a big of enough leap for me now that's actually who I want to see. So
worst to first, big leap. I think for me here, I pay extra for the International Golf Channel that I get. Unfortunately, it's in Dutch, so I don't want, I just have it on mute, but. So it's mostly synced to the whatever golf channel, CBS broadcast that's going on in the States, except for when they do the fluff pieces, they just keep showing golf here. And when they go to commercial, they keep showing golf. And it is unbelievable how much you notice when the commercials come in and all the fluff pieces and stuff, because it's like it's 30 to 40% more golf on TV, and it's just none of the crap that comes with it. And again, maybe casual fans really do love the fluff pieces and the cutaways and stuff from all the action, but I'll never understand putting the camera on the two announcers talking rather than the action going on. You can talk while the action's going on. At some point, these broadcasts are going to have to change away from the formula that's been in use forever and just show us golf. But
there was a good piece that Jimmy Roberts did on Presswick this week, and. But, like, I saw it on Saturday, and then they played it again on Sunday. And I'm like, well, why am I seeing this again? Now, granted, not everyone's going to watch as much as we watched this weekend. But, like, yeah, no, that kind of stuff is probably going to have to change at some point soon.
How much, so I mean, this feels like forever ago now, but the pre-tournament press conferences, but what did you have a take, I guess, on what Rory had to say before the tournament started about the Olympics and about pleasing everybody and basically him just breathing fire all over the Open Championship Media Center?
The people who are, like, ripping into Rory for skipping this, like, I really don't understand. Like, you know, when he, like, I understand that maybe, like, he probably shouldn't have maybe not said what he said in the way that he phrased it. But, like, you know, we really can't have it both ways where, like, we rip into these guys for speaking their mind and then complain when no one says anything. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is, like, I have yet to see how anyone, like, no one has explained to me in any kind of article or anything, no one has said how exactly Rory playing a stroke play event in Brazil is going to actually grow the game. We have so many, but a day like today, like the golf was so fantastic to watch. And you know, obviously people like us, like we're tuned in, we're geared up, we're ready for it. But then like when you really think about it, like the average person playing, it's like, well, you know, it costs too much, it takes too long. You have, you know, rampant sexism in some parts of the world for it. There's a class system that people can't break through. Like, tell me when those issues are resolved, and that's when I'll actually believe the game can grow in some meaningful way, not because Rory and Jordan are playing in Brazil.
Yeah, I this really didn't fire me up that much, but I do have, I guess, some opinions and takes on it. It's a little bit opposite of what you're saying. I agree with the whole honesty thing. I love how Rory is almost always very honest, very clear. And like this was one time where he just like had no problems burning it to the ground. I'm not going to try and even remotely try to be politically correct here. However, some of the stuff he said, I think it was so unnecessary. Like to be like, I'm going to watch the stuff that matters.
It's like, that was unnecessary. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and it's like, man, look, I'm with you. If you don't want to play the Olympics, do it. I'm with you speaking your mind and being honest about your reasons on not wanting to play it. But just taking that shot at it was just kind of like, I mean, yeah, again, I'm so far on Team Rory, but it was just like, I don't know. It was hard to really get like swear off on that one. Like I gave it the Bubba test. Like if Bubba said that and didn't do it, I would have flipped out a little bit on it. So, I'm very well aware that I'm not necessarily fair with my treatment and my judgment of guys when they do stuff like this. But, and as far as growing the game, I agree that I don't necessarily think the Olympics, when we say grow the game, is going to bring a lot more people playing the game, because like you said, the issues of playing the game are still all there. But it really is going to be billions of people that watch the Olympics. I'm not saying billions of people are going to tune into golf, but it could be completely new eyeballs on the sport to watch it that could have growing interest in watching the sport. Now, do I care about that? Not really. Should Rory care about that? Maybe, but I don't. I'm fine with him saying, you know, that he doesn't feel a responsibility to grow the game. I am fine with that. It doesn't matter to me. But it is the Olympics. I know that there's a lot of reasons not to go, but the stance I've had from the very beginning is that, and Spieth even referred to this in one of his press conferences, which I was like, I think he kind of stole the take from me, which I'll discuss that with him privately. But I just, like I said, I think when the opening ceremonies go off, all those lights, the cameras flashing, and billions of people watching around the world, and the athletes are walking through, the athletes and Matt Kuchar are walking through the opening ceremonies.
Backdoor to spot on the team. Man. Yeah, I didn't know it was going to happen.
I just have a feeling they're going to have a little regret on it when somebody earns a gold medal that we've never heard of before. Like it's kind of like, wow, man, this really is something different. And this is you know, I know they care about the majors. They have their own stroke play events. I get all that. I just think I don't know. If it was in the U.S., these guys all would have gone. They all would have played. It would have been a non-issue. But they're acting like Rio is on the moon. Like, it's like the farthest trip they'll ever have to make. These guys go across the pond all the time. It's no big deal. I just think that there is something to the Golf Olympics. I think it's probably already ruined. I'm a bit alone on it because a lot of people just love to make fun of it. But I don't know. I'm still planning on at least watching a little bit of it. I think I'm going to be out of town when it goes off. But it's kind of my long-winded take to say I kind of agree. I'm with Rory being honest. I'm with you on that, getting on guys for being honest, but it's a bit unnecessary. And I can't put myself in their shoes, though. Maybe if I was in their shoes, that I wouldn't want to go as well.
No, and don't get me wrong. Like, watching golf at the Olympics, I mean, it is going to bring new people in. I have no doubt about that. I think where I kind of took a little bit of issue with it was, like, the people just laying into the players for skipping it. It's like, well, you know, the Zika thing, like, is it that big of a deal? It's probably nowhere near as big of a deal as people are making it right out to be, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so much other stuff going on in Rio right now that I wouldn't blame anybody for not wanting to take any part of.
Yep.
And on top of that, it's like, you know what, these guys, sure, like, it's going to be really cool for somebody to win a gold medal. But, I mean, there's also, they also, the last time it was in the Olympics was 1904. Like, they have never once grown up with the idea of, wow, you know what would be really cool is if I could win a gold medal. It's like they've spent their entire lives focused on winning golf tournaments and winning majors and all that. It's just, it's never been a priority. So when you throw that in with all the other stuff going around in Rio, like, it doesn't, like, I'm cool with them stripping it too.
Yeah. No, I mean, all that makes sense. And I think the security issues in Rio are a little more real than if you're not going to be able to go and enjoy yourself and feel safe, it's not worth going. And I've talked to at least one player who was not eligible for the team, obviously, but he said, he's like, I wouldn't go. Like, if I had the chance, I would not go. He's like, I like my life. I'm not in a huge hurry to put my health and safety at risk to go down there. I was like, all right, that's hard to argue with. I get all that. But I feel like these guys have just been, like, shitting on this event as just a stupid event. Outside of the location of it and the risk of it, I know they screwed the format up. Clearly, they missed. Yeah. They really missed an opportunity to make a team event, and they would have had a much better turnout had they made it a team event. But I don't know. That's a lot. That's a lot on the Olympics. I think it's been kind of beaten to death. It's a really pretty minor blip on the calendar.
With that said, when Kurdech is winning the gold medal, I'll be all in. So just, you know, keep that in mind.
Can I bet somewhere on Kuchar to finish exactly third place?
Probably.
I feel like if golf somehow stays in the Olympics, that it should be called, it shouldn't be a bronze medal, it should be like the Kuchar medal, like the third place medal.
How upset is he that, like, he doesn't get to color coordinate his outfit? Because, he's always all over the place, and, like, he's already, like, Adidas already has everything set up. So, you know, him and his turquoise hat are just going to have to stay home. But
it's like mismatching different shades of brown, probably.
Phil, turquoise hat and his brown shoes. Like, just get out of here.
Phil, on Saturday, went, I'm trying to think of the combination here. Was it blue pants, black shirt, blue hat?
Just, yeah, like, it was something weird.
Can we talk about the binder clip, too? We zoomed past that. I went too past the Open. We shouldn't be done talking about the Open, because the Olympics does not deserve to be talked about immediately after this Open championship.
But absolutely not.
What's the deal with the binder clip? Is that Phil just, like just trolling us? Like, he's like, you know what? Twitter hasn't been talking about me in a couple of days. Let's see what I can do here. I'm just going to found a random binder clip in his hotel and put it on his hat.
So, what did he say? Something about how, like, with the wind, like, he was worried about his hat falling off. It's like, how? Like, it wasn't that windy. Like, we're not talking about, like, the wind that was at the Old Course last year. Like, we're talking about wind that was definitely very playable. So, like, I honestly think he, like someone, like, left it in his hotel room previously. Like, he's on this, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to put this on my head.
He's played in 22 other Opens before this, like, and he's never had to paperclip his hat to his hair.
Exactly. It's like, it's the whole aggressive colors thing all over again. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to put a paperclip in my hat and see if anyone notices.
It was the aggressive color paperclip. That was the, or binder clip. That was the key. Man, those was just some absolutely hilarious Twitter accounts that popped out from that, huh?
Phil's binder clip. Good Lord. It's like the Stephen Bowditch Break 80 account that followed me a few weeks ago, too. It's like, I don't know what you people are doing, but you also need to stop.
You told me you would follow me if I made that Twitter account.
Sorry.
No, I think with Phil, I'm still back to Phil. Like, I don't know what your feeling is before you go to bed tonight. Is he probably at complete peace with himself? First of all, on the jet on the way back, he's probably gambled and lost that silver plate, silver medal that he won. Like, it's lost already. It's gone by now, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like, the $40,000 bottle of wine that Amy picked out, like, that's gone too. It's all over.
Sean Zach from golf.com tweeted out, as we've been on here, that I forget who, or I can see here, Webb Simpson's one of them, Keegan Bradley, and a few others just headed off number one tee to play more golf at Troon right now. What are the odds? Well, yeah, what are the odds that Phil shows up on that first green trying to press the bets?
That would be the best.
All right.
That would be amazing.
That's officially the last gambling Phil reference I'm going to make this week. I've beaten it to death as I do. I'm done. I'm retired.
It's okay. I've fade text messages from him and Herod since all weekend, so I mean I can't really throw any stones in that one.
I emptied the chamber. All my Phil jokes. I recycled everyone I had. I got a lot of heat from people on recycling tweets this week. So
you didn't try and Jordan a shank golf ball though.
I did not do that. You did that. I don't think I crying Jordan anything this week. Wow, I'm losing it. I'm losing my touch. So we talked a little bit about Rory's comments. Did you make much of Spieth's comments after his round on Saturday, saying he thinks the media doesn't really treat him fairly, he gets too many negative questions, and he's having a lot better year than people make it out to be?
It's tough. I think we, not necessarily we, but like I think the media in general, I do think they do pick at Spieth a little more than they probably should. Same thing with Rory, same thing with Jason Day. Like whenever, we've talked about this before, like whenever there's any slight hint that they've started to struggle, you know, they'll miss one cut and then they'll finish like T45, T22 or something, and people are asking like what's wrong with them. I do think that they are a little unfair, so I understand his hesitation and his frustration towards that. But part of me also thinks too that it's very like if he's bringing this up at a press conference and the way that he said it, it's very clearly in his head.
Yeah,
and that's where it starts to get a little weird for me, because like part of me now does wonder how much of it is actually affecting him. Like, I mean, obviously he's going to be fine ultimately. Like, he's too talented not to be. But I just, if he's thinking about it, and he seemed really, you know, he was pissed when he was talking about it in the presser. It's like, you know, is this starting to affect you negatively? And it seems likely that it is at this point.
Yeah, I was talking about this a little bit with Tron on Saturday. It doesn't really register that much with me. In that I kind of compare this year for him to Rory 2013, which is still a bit unfair to Spieth. Spieth won twice this year. Rory didn't win on the PGA Tour that year. It was kind of his year, Rory's year after the big year. He followed it. 2014 was a huge year for Rory, but hadn't occurred yet at that point. 2012, I think he got to number one in the world, was number one in the world entering 2013, signed the big Nike contract. Things got a little hairy for him. He withdrew with Honda, cited the wisdom teeth, walked off the course after nine holes. It was just kind of like a little bit of immaturity shining through from Rory's side, and that it just seemed to get – everything got really big and really real for him really fast, and he was not quite fully ready to handle that, and I think he would admit that. That's kind of the feeling I get right now with Spieth, and that what he did last year, winning two majors, almost winning a Grand Slam, winning the FedEx Cup – he set such an unrealistic precedent for what we can expect from him, and that he's two swings away from winning the Masters this year, from being a major champion this year. And if those two swings don't happen, none of these questions happen. I mean, it'd be like, wow, he hasn't followed up the major win that well in these U.S. Open and Open Championship, but it would be registering on the scale at all right now, I don't think. So, I think there is a bit of overreaction to it, and I think he's just got to be like, he's got to just dread going in that press room. It does sound like it's starting to wear on him. He's got to dread just like dealing with all these questions like about how bad you're playing and whatnot, when he's really not been that bad. I mean, he's not striking it as well as last year, but again, that shouldn't be the barometer. And I mean, I know he's signed big endorsement deals and is former number one player in the world, and you know that maybe it is fair to hold him to that really really high standard. But I'm just kind of like, man, this is probably somewhere in the middle. That's what Tron said as well, in the middle between last season and this season as to what we can expect from him. But man, I don't know. I can kind of see where he's coming from. At the same time, man, you don't want to feed the guys that are driving this narrative this exact stuff. You know what I mean? Because that's going to get them the exact. It's going to become a story, like everything does. So,
well, exactly. I think that's why I'm just a little concerned, because it's just like, well, Ultimately, like I said, he's going to be fine. But, like, I just, part of me now just wonders how much he's thinking about this stuff. Like, is he just getting so frustrated that, like, he can't play to the level that we know he's capable of playing at? Like, with that said, though, like, it's not like he's been struggling. Like, he won what, like, 5-6 weeks? No, I guess, yeah, about 6-7 weeks ago at, was it the Dean and DeLuca?
Yeah, it's Colonial. Just call it Colonial.
Yeah, it's Colonial. But, like, yeah, so, like, he won. He didn't, it wasn't that long ago that he's won. Like, he's got a bunch of top fives this year. He's got 2 wins. Like, he absolutely killed everyone in Hawaii. Like, I'm not really all that concerned about it. Like, he's too good not to be good. That's the thing. But, you know, now I do kind of wonder how much he's thinking about it and if that's actually seeping in. Because, I mean, we've seen how explosive and expressive he is on the course, too. Like, in part, he's just thinking about where his head's at. But he's going to be fine. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah, and again, the run he went on for 5 straight majors is, if he had just sprinkled in whatever he finished at the U.S. Open and whatever he finished this week in between that run of, you know, not finishing outside the top 4 of a major in 5 straight majors, no one would have thought anything of it. Tiger went on a 2-year span in 2003-04 where he had maybe 2 top 10s at majors, if I remember that stat right. Like, it was a swing change, I know, but it's like these span, like, to call it like a 2-tournament major slump, to call that, to bring attention to that.
That's not a slump.
That's not a normal thing. Like, if we're going to do that, I mean, Jason Day, the success he's had in the last year outweighs Spieth's success, as ridiculous as that sounds. It's accurate. So he's earned more goodwill, I guess you could say, in that regard. But Jason Day's been a non-factor in the last three majors. Was he a factor this year at the Masters? Like, if we're going to be short-sighted, like, we should be dishing it out in Day's direction too, you know?
No, exactly. I mean,
that's not really that fair. He was T8 at the U.S. Open, T10 at the Masters, and T22 this week. So maybe that was a little unfair. But
it didn't, though. Like, I don't really recall thinking at really any point in those 3 events that, like, he had, like, a great shot at winning any of them either.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and so that's fine. Like, there's nothing.
Yeah, again, that's not the standard. That's not the standard, right?
Right. I mean, look, if he was going out there and just missing cuts, if he was missing cuts in all the majors and, like, you know, 3 out of 5 tour stops or something like that, then sure, we could talk about that. But I just, now I'm actually wondering how much of it it's affecting his game, that's all. Hopefully not too much, because obviously he's fantastic and he's great for everything. So I wouldn't worry too much about it, but you never know.
Yeah. I think, I don't want to say, again, a 2-win season and one that he almost won a major, I don't want to call it a wash, but I feel like he almost just needs some time off. His crazy schedule at the beginning of the year kind of just threw things off. He just looks uncomfortable in the course, and I don't know if it's because we notice it more because he's on TV more and whatnot, but something doesn't seem totally right with him. He seems a bit petulant out there on the course, and maybe when he was winning 5 times a year, that seemed that's just Jordan being Jordan. Now it seems whiny, but I don't enjoy watching him as much as I did last year. Again, last year was historic, but I'm not saying I'm not a big fanboy for Spieth anymore, but it is wearing on me at least a little bit, not as much as it is on other people, because I think other people are to the point where they don't like him. I mean, there's definitely people that are not fans of him at this point, which couldn't have imagined that a year ago.
No, exactly. I mean, people, it's gone, that has gone, I it's obvious, that's gone too far. But, like, you know, again, like, this is, I mean, part of me thinks that, like, it comes, like, I saw Tron tweet about this too, but how it comes with the territory.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I get it. It does. But, you know, it's kind of ridiculous, the standard that he's been asked to live up to too. Like, he's not missing cuts. Like, he's not going out there and just, you know, shanking balls left and right and, you know, doing, you know, firing 80s everywhere. Like, golf is tough. This is what happens sometimes. Like, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. Who will, on that, I mean, I not a hot take at all. He's a top 5 player in the world. Would not be shocked at all to see him win the PGA in a couple weeks. In two weeks.
Of course not.
So, I mean, with that, I don't know how much you know about Baltusrol. Do you have any guys that
And by win, you mean finish 5 shots back of Sergio, is what you're saying.
Okay. So
that's what you mean.
So is that, I guess, did you just answer my question? Is that what your pick is going to be for Baltusrol?
I actually can't remember. We did a podcast beginning of the year where we picked the major winners, and I honestly can't remember who I picked.
Oh, okay.
For Baltusrol. I'd have to go back and find it, I guess. But it might have been Matsuyama, now that I'm thinking about it. But
you already lost that bet, man. You already owe me a round of golf whenever we finally actually meet in person. You owe me a round of golf.
I know. It makes me shake every time I think about it. Baltusrol, I don't know a ton about, to be honest. I know way more about Troon than I do about Baltusrol. I mean, it was last there, what, like 05, I think, PGA?
Yep, Phil.
Something like that. Phil won there. I mean, who knows? I mean, he could be the guy to look at right now.
I mean, no.
As crazy as that sounds, I mean, he could be the guy to look at, so.
I was going to say, are the odds even up? He's got to be less than 15 to 1 to win the PGA now, I would think. But
I would think so, yeah.
Man, it's hard for me not to be a little bit bitter, because this was almost Phil's, like, Jack Nicklaus, age 46, run at it. It's just Stenson earned it. It's so hard to be upset about it. I know.
You can't be upset about it.
I'm not.
It doesn't make any sense.
I'm not.
Like, it was a great day. Like, it just.
No one's earned it more than Stenson just earned it. Like it.
No.
This is. I'm chalking this up to this being having just ended like 2 hours ago, and I still haven't fully grasped everything that just happened, and I'm still kind of on this roller coaster a little bit, but.
For what it's worth, I'm seeing like 25 to 1 right now for Phil.
Oh,
at Baltusrol.
Okay, that's going to dip, but I'm going to have to get on that right now. But
20 to 25.
For being not having a horse in this race at all, you are perhaps the biggest Ryder Cup fan I know. Definitely biggest of anyone I know that does not have a horse in the race. But
right.
I typically don't like knee-jerk reactions after like a tournament that's months out and saying, how is this going to impact the Ryder Cup? But I do think this week will have a lot of impact. As we get, you know, there's only one more major left where the points count double. We get a lot better picture of who we think is going to be on the team. So I do think this was a significant week and that J.B. Holmes earned a ton of points. Are there any other takeaways from a Ryder Cup perspective you have from this week?
Not necessarily from this week. I mean, it's been a little while since you and I talked about this, but I mean, you guys, like, Europe wasn't looking so good on paper about, what, 6 months ago?
Yeah.
But like you should be a little scared. You know, obviously, like they're big four guys up at the top there, whether with Rory and Rose and Stenson and Sergio, they were always going to be there. But like you look down further on the list, and it's like you probably should be a little concerned about Danny Willett and Matthew Fitzpatrick, and Andy Sullivan and guys like that. Like it's just. Yeah, like it's not going to be as much of a cakewalk as I think you and I talked about back in January. So.
I've definitely shifted in that direction too. Mostly though, because of the month leading up to this, of how lackluster U.S. golf has been. I guess I would say month leading up to the U.S. Open, because DJ's breakthrough was pretty big, and most of the U.S. team actually had really good strong weeks in Troon this week, but. We're talking about a completely different style of golf. Again, we're 2 months out from the Ryder Cup. It's impossible to really say that this is a good sign for the U.S. team and whatnot. I think JB, the big takeaway is like I think JB Holmes is now going to be on the team because he's going to skyrocket up to about, I think I saw Doug Ferguson or somebody tweet that he'll be fourth or fifth in the rankings, I think, at this point. But it is a log jam on the U.S. team between like, Zach Johnson came in this week at around 4,000 points, and Holmes was at 12th at 3,000. So there's just a ton of guys in that weird phase. But
yeah, I mean, there's only DJ and Spieth have essentially locked up a spot on the team, right? So it's like, yeah, I mean, you could have anybody from Phil. Like right now, I think Fowler's outside of a guaranteed spot.
Yep.
So like you know he like you never would have thought. The last year that Fowler was going to need a captain's pick,
yeah,
which is basically like the worst thing for Davis Love because you can't just leave Fowler off the team.
No,
so you know what he wants. He absolutely wants Fowler to qualify so that he doesn't have to, you know, instead of someone like you know Charlie Hoffman qualifying or something. How worried are you that like he's going to take a pick on like Webb Simpson? Or something like, you know, like I wrote a piece a little while ago saying making a case for Jim Furyk. And the reason I made the case for it was I was looking at the roster and I'm like, you know what, you have a ton of bombers out here. You're going to need someone to find the middle. He's been playing well since he got back from the wrist injury. To me, it made a little bit of sense. And I got absolutely crucified.
Yeah. I think Kevin Van Valkenburgh's made the point in how much like that class of players, like those guys in their young 50s, late 40s, like look out for each other in historical reference. I forget the example he gave, but maybe Jay Haas taking some guys in their upper 40s and whatnot, and the guys they've known for 20 years and they're friends with have a hard time not taking spending a captain's pick on them. So I can see it happening. I can see a scenario that I've somehow talked myself into that come September. If there's not a clear-cut 12th guy to add to the team, I could go with that. As much as Furyk's past,
record, that was my theory on it as well. Like, yeah. I wasn't saying like, oh my god, you need to pick Jim Furyk. Like it was basically like, well, who else are you going to pick at this point?
I guess I'd have to look at. I don't remember this. Is it his four ball record that's a complete joke? Like he's like 2-9 and whatever in one.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up too.
So all right, let's say you make him the 12th guy on the team, and you want to send him out in foursomes, which I think he's got a decent record at, if I remember right.
Yeah.
The U.S. team does not have a good record in foursomes. If you want to play him twice in foursomes and play a single match, maybe play him once in foursomes. I can latch onto that idea, but if there's hotter, younger players that are going to bring a lot more fire and passion and just flair to it and care a lot more about, if it's like between him and Patrick Reed getting a last spot or something like that, it's a pretty easy decision in my mind.
His record going into 2014 was 1-8-1 in four balls,
and he won one of them, if I remember, because I was citing that record during 2014, like every other tweet, I think. So
yeah, like don't get me, like look, I in a perfect world, someone like guys like Justin Thomas and Tony Finau, like, those are the guys that you want up there and qualifying and playing well.
Yeah.
But you know, there's definitely a more than decent chance, I think, that you have guys like Kuchar and Simpson and whoever else either making the team or being close. And that's, you know, you throw them in against guys like, you know, Fitzpatrick and Willett and, you know, all those guys in it, and then it gets a little dicey.
Isn't it crazy that Steve Stricker has more Ryder Cup points than Tony Finau does?
Oh my god.
Finau is 52nd going at
that seems wrong.
Well, so he only got like 300,000 or something. The tournament he won was like a very small purse because it was an opposite field event.
Yeah.
But yeah, that does not seem right. Something seems wrong there.
Hey, look, if Stricker keeps playing the way he's playing right now, you might need to take him anyway.
Yeah.
I think he's going there as an assistant with Tiger, I think, so you don't have to worry about Tiger making it, so.
Yeah. I haven't done this exercise adding up points for everyone, like adding up everyone's fall series points. I think Kevin Na would get a bump from this, Kisner would get a bump from this, so I'm being biased in cherry-picking Justin Thomas in that he made about $1.5 million or something like that in two events. He finished third and then won in Malaysia. That would put him, jump him to like 10th in points right now. Again, the other guys may jump in the list as well, but those, the fact those points don't count at all, still a little bitter about, but at the same time, he's not, I don't know, so he's not shown consistent enough play to make me think that he's like, he should be on the Ryder Cup team definitively, but I feel like, and the U.S. Open was definitely this way. He led the team, led the entire field in birdies or better. So he makes a ton of bogeys, but he also makes a ton of birdies. And I feel like that's a great, great four-ball player you could have on that team. Is a guy that's going to go out there and just maybe make six birdies. He might eject and be in his pocket on three or four of the holes. That's fine. Pair him with Spieth or somebody that's going to make a lot of pars. And I think you've got a potential Ryder Cupper from that perspective. But you can set up the course. They can set up the course however they want to. They can make the fairways wide, suit the bombers if they want to. It usually sets up very easy. He plays well on easier courses, I think. I mean, comparatively speaking, in Malaysia, he won at like 28 under or something like that. I can make the case for it still. I know points-wise he's not close, but and I know he's my boy and I'm biased there, but it could happen.
No, well, look, of anyone who's currently not qualified, I think you can probably make the argument that he's the most talented of the actual group that isn't qualified yet. It's just, I mean, he's had trouble being consistent, like you said. So it's tough. But I mean, I do think that, you know, like you said, if you put him with somebody like Spieth or someone like Brandt Snedeker, even you put him with a guy like that, and I think it can really work. Which is kind of why I was thinking about Furyk previously, because I'm like, what are you going to do? You can't just have guys like Koepka and Thomas and whoever else just going out there and bombing the ball and having no idea where it's going.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true. It's very true. I just got a random question on Twitter. I didn't even like float out the idea of podcast questions, but Ola Scholander once says, players, FedEx Cup, Race to Dubai, Ryder Cup, and now the Open for Stenson. Hall of Famer? I don't know how you factor in. I don't think he's qualified for it. Don't you have to like specifically qualify for it now?
Yeah, well, they got rid of the international ballot, right? The tough thing is that there aren't as many wins anymore for these guys. Like Phil's got like 45 wins or something, something ridiculous. Like you're never going to see a tour player now. Like if you get into double digits, like you're doing incredible stuff.
Yeah.
And so like I think without ever really doing any research on it, I would say yes, but that's tough.
Yeah, it's a good question, but to be honest, I just don't care about the Golf Hall of Fame. The fact that Zach Johnson's probably going to make it is make like, you know what, I don't care about the Golf Hall of Fame. But all right, Sarson, anything else we missed from the Open Championship? Have we covered all bases?
Probably. I mean, I can go on and on.
Yeah.
On about what happened today. But I mean, so that's, I will never see another day like this. And if anyone listening to this didn't see it for some reason, you need to do whatever you can to figure that out.
It needs to be like immediately like golf's greatest rounds. That needs to be on there. Like that's tailor made for Golf Channel, Golf's Greatest Rounds, ESPN Classic. It could use a 30 for 30 for all I know.
I would be shocked. I would be shocked if Golf Channel doesn't have it on at some point this coming week.
Like, oh, yeah.
They have to.
Yeah, they have the rights to the immediate rights to it. So it's an easy one for them. That's a layup.
With the Canadian Open field this week, I mean, you're not going to do anything with that. So you might as well play it.
Has anybody crying Jordan all of Canada because of the field this week?
Well, I mean, you can if you like. I'll leave that one to you. As a Canadian citizen, I'd probably be I'd be expelled from the country. So
I actually have a perfect gift for it, and you'll hate it because it's a wrestling one too, and you love wrestling. So
is it the Shawn Michaels thing?
I don't know. The one where they lay the flag out or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I know what you're doing.
Sorry in advance. I know I'm not Canadian, so the apology is not implied, but sorry in advance. Yes. All right, Sarson, thank you for helping me recap a truly historic day in golf. Man, only one more major in 2 more weeks, and we're off for 8.5 months, 9 months of it. At least we have Ryder Cup this year, but it's amazing how fast these majors have gone this year. But they've all been a lot of fun. They've all been pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's been incredible, and we'll do it again in a couple of weeks, and then Ryder Cup. I'm always looking forward to that too. So
all right, I'll do all I can in the meantime to get you to be rooting for the U.S. come Ryder Cup time. But
good luck.
All right, thank you for the time, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, man.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes,
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect